Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning for the second hour of the program. Jack Brighton is the producer of the show. Jason Croft at the controls. This morning, in the second hour of the show, we'll be looking at the issue of gun regulation and how it connects to public health. We have three guests with us here this morning in the studio. Sue Peschen is Firearms Project Manager with the Consumer Federation of America. Brooke Anderson is Gun Regulation Organizer with the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Catherine Griffiths is with the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. All here in studio to talk about this issue, and questions certainly are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you all very much for being here. I suppose we can start by maybe talking a little bit about numbers, something that I'm sure that you're concerned with, that is the amount of death and injury caused by guns. Let's just talk about the state of Illinois. What do the numbers look like?
Among all state of Illinois, we recently did a study looking at youth in Illinois, and youth as defined by 0 to 19 years of age. There were 203 youth-related deaths, gun-related deaths among youth in Illinois in 1999, and that was out of a total of 1,209 total gun-related deaths in the state of Illinois in 1999.
Hmm. And is that, what are the, if you compare that with other years, what we know, is that fairly constant? Is it trending up? Is it trending down? Can you say something about over time, what it's been like?
Sure. Over time, I think we've seen since 1994 a steady decline in gun-related deaths, I believe both in the United States and in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think accounts for that?
Well, there are a couple of different things that account for a reduction in gun-related deaths and injuries. A lot of it is just normal fluctuations in the rates of homicide, rates of gun-related violence, and then crime. Because if you look at other types of crime in the United States, that's gone down as well. Certainly the economic situation has something to do with it. Some states are actually now sort of on more of an upswing. There are some cities across the country that are on an upswing as well with gun-related deaths. It varies over time.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things we know, too, is that in the state of Illinois, the gun-related deaths among youth are 50% higher than the rate in the United States right now.
Hmm. And what do you think accounts for that, or is there any way to say?
Well, some of that has to do with just the concentration of urban area here in Illinois, specifically in Chicago. So in states and also, I mean, Illinois has a significant number of gun owners, certainly, too. And in a lot of public health studies that have been done on high gun-owning states, there are higher rates of gun-related deaths.
Hmm. And is that something that you are, though, more likely to see in urban areas as opposed to rural areas?
No, it depends on the state, really, and it depends on the type of gun-related deaths that you're talking about. For example, suicides are much more common in high gun-owning states, which tend to be rural. So it's not necessarily so that gun deaths just happen in the city areas. You know, they happen downstate just as they happen in the city of Chicago. In Illinois, they're more concentrated in Chicago, specifically related to homicides. But it doesn't, you know, it's not a general rule that it's just in the cities. And in fact, in a lot of the rural states where you have a lot of high gun ownership, you have a high rate of death and injury.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add also that in the state of Illinois, 75% of the state's population is in Chicago and in the Collar counties. So clearly there's going to be, just with a higher concentration of people, you're going to have a higher death rate, gun death specifically, too. And there are, there are gun owners up in Chicago and in the suburbs, in the surrounding areas of Chicago. So I think that correlates with, studies that have shown that higher gun ownership, leads to higher gun death rates.
Yeah, I know one of the things that I know we'll want to talk about, particularly because Sue Peschen is here and she's the one with the Consumer Federation of America, is the fact that people who are concerned about deaths and injuries caused by guns, some of them have taken a kind of an interesting approach, and they have said that one of the things that separates guns from virtually all other consumer products in this country is that they are not regulated for health and safety as other things, and that that perhaps they should, that gun manufacturers maybe should be responsible for deaths and injuries caused by the guns, and perhaps something could be done to make the guns safer. Just before we talk about that, I guess, and I'm going interested in going back to the statistics, what we can say about how many deaths or injuries from guns are accidental. We can truly say that one person did not intend to hurt or kill the other. That's maybe a separate sort of issue. But how many of these injuries and deaths do we think really are an accident?
Well, in terms of the study of preventable problem, it is a much smaller percentage. I mean, the highest proportion of gun-related deaths and injuries in the United States are related to suicides, and then homicides are next most common, and then unintentional shootings and deaths. And we actually prefer to call them unintentional shootings, because when you refer to them as accidents, you're assuming that there is no way to prevent those deaths. And in fact, the majority of those deaths and injuries can be prevented, and that's part of the reason why the study was called a preventable problem. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with actually a lot of homicides and suicides as well. Oftentimes when these deaths are categorized as such, they were unintended. So you can't always assume that just because the injury has been categorized as an intentional injury that it was.
Mm-hmm. You want to add something to that?
Oh, I was just going to add quickly that, you know, the study also focuses specifically on firearm deaths. It doesn't really talk about firearm injuries, which actually are a much higher proportion of what happens when gun tragedies occur. I believe that the rate is for every one youth that is killed by firearms, there are four that are injured. So, you know, it's really quite astounding, the ratio. But those injuries where people survive aren't, they don't seem to get as much attention as gun deaths. So there's the death problem and the injury problem. We're trying to focus on both of those.
Okay. We have a caller we'll get right to, but I think maybe I should go ahead and introduce again the guest. The last person you heard speaking is Catherine Griffiths from the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. Also with us this morning, Sue Peschen. She is the Firearms Project Manager with the Consumer Federation of America, and also Brooke Anderson, Gun Regulation Organizer with the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Questions are welcome here as we talk about gun regulation and public health issues. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here's somebody on a cell phone on our line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
It's I'd like to commend you on you for the job you do on moderating all of your programs. You really do an excellent job. However, I think, one, you've got a very biased panel. Number two, I'm hearing statistics that are tossed out just kind of random. Not understand how people can come up that because you have a larger population in the Chicago or Cook County or counties around Chicago, that the rate of crime, gun misuse, killings, whatever you want to call it, should be higher. There's no particular excuse for saying that because of the people there, more people per 1,000 should be killed by firearms. Makes no sense to me unless there's some other cause, and it sounds like guns are being blamed for social cause problems as opposed to the root cause being investigated. Does your panel care to discuss that?
Okay. Well, that I think that it's a reasonable question. Are you simply saying that you should expect in any area where there's greater population that there may be more injuries, deaths caused by guns? Or is there, you really actually have to look more closely at who those people are and how they live and where they live?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question from the caller. I do want to respond to the first part of his point, which had to do with just sort of throwing out different statistics. These statistics actually came from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they're a compilation of death certificates from around the country, and we specifically focused on Illinois. One of the problems with this particular issue is there isn't a whole lot of data collection. The gun lobby has actually been quite resistant to research in this area, and where we have data collection protection for other types of products, like we know makes and models of cars that are involved in so many crashes per year. We have no information on that for guns. In terms of the point that you made about deaths in the city versus deaths, you know, downstate or in more rural areas, it just so happens that in the state of Illinois, you know, there are problems within the city of Chicago. And I don't think it's unreasonable, just when you look at crime rates of other types of crime, not just gun-related crime, but you look at robbery or theft, any of those are going to be higher in higher populated areas. So it's not an unreasonable association to make. And if you look at data from the FBI, this type of data, you're going to find that across the board. Urban areas in the United States in general have higher rates. Now, it's not necessarily so that they have higher rates related to unintentionals or suicides necessarily, but related to crime, they're higher in urban areas, and that's across the country. Got higher rates in New York City than you do in New York State. It's not necessarily the same with the suicides and unintentionals, though. So it's not an unreasonable association to make. And in terms of blaming the product, it's interesting because with most other types of issues, we don't focus as much on the user. Now, the gun industry and the gun lobby are very invested in us focusing on the user. If anything goes wrong, it must be the user's fault somehow. People are irresponsible. But with other types of products, we focus on the product itself and the industry that makes that product, and we make them accountable. And that's what we're calling for here.
Well, I hope that we're getting at least some of the caller's questions. But let me stick with that point for a moment. And because I know that some people would make the argument that, in a sense, the gun is its own warning. They'd say, well, okay, maybe it's appropriate that on stepladders, we put a sign that says, do not climb to the very top and stand on one foot. You might fall off and hurt yourself. We probably shouldn't have to tell people that, but we do. It's written on there. Mm-hmm. But that people would argue that a gun, you shouldn't have to write on that gun, don't point this at somebody and pull the trigger because it might go off and kill them. That you should have enough sense to know that that could happen, that it is implicit in the product itself, the danger that it poses. So how do you respond to an argument like that?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to look at health and safety regulation does not just have to do with product safety or modifying the product, although that is an important component of it. It also has to do with the actual design and distribution of that product. And so there are lots of things that, there are lots of ways in which the gun industry can be regulated for health and safety that don't just have to do with warnings. Warnings are a very small aspect. And, you know, I don't want to discount the value of warnings either, because a lot of Americans don't recognize the risks inherent in having guns in the home, things that can happen. In addition, there are a lot of defective guns that are out there on the market, a lot of defective safety-related products that are put on guns that are defective. And it's important for them to be educated about the risks of having those products in their homes. And the gun industry, you know, constantly pushes the need to have these products in your home for self-defense, but they don't let consumers know about the risks. And that's what we're asking for. That's what we're calling for. Yeah.
We had some other callers, and people are certainly welcome to call and tell us what they think. Just to go to the first comment that the caller made about bias, we're not making any secret of the fact that you all certainly have concerns about guns, believe in gun regulation. Would you all say that, how far would you go with them? I mean, would you say that as far as you're concerned, it would be better if we didn't? If we didn't have as many guns, if we didn't have any guns, would you all say that, well, you know, some level of gun ownership is appropriate? I guess I just wanted to make sure that people who are listening understand where you all are coming from on the issue. Let me begin with Catherine, the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. Now, that seems pretty clear what an organization like that would be concerned with.
Right. Well, we're certainly concerned with the injury and death that's caused by guns. And you know, some of the things that we want to educate the public about are the risks of gun ownership and the risks of especially having guns around young people, young children. You know, I think that there are people who own guns. Guns are a legal product, and they, you know, Americans own a lot of guns. I think there's an estimated 250 million guns in this country. And I think that we see the results of that when we look at the number of gun deaths and gun injuries that occur every year in this country as opposed to or compared with other industrialized nations around the world. I think what we really want to see is ways to reduce death and injury. There are people who own guns. We hope that they do the right thing by locking their guns up at home, by keeping them unloaded, keeping them out of the reach of young people in their homes or other users who might stumble upon them and use them in ways they're not intended. But we also believe that, you know, the risk is reduced to especially young people if there are no guns in the home. So one of the things that we often let parents know is that they have a choice to make. They can decide to reduce the risk to their children by removing guns from their homes voluntarily, or if they really must keep a gun in the home, then they can lock them up and keep the ammunition separately or make sure that their children don't have access to those things.
I think it's a good question in terms of are we talking about do we want to ban all guns? Mm-hmm. No, we don't want to ban all guns. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at other types of health and safety regulation of other inherently dangerous consumer products, because guns are inherently dangerous. You can't use a gun without risking injury to the user or to bystanders. There's no question about that. People always say, well, guns are meant to kill. How can you possibly make them safe? But we regulate a lot of other inherently dangerous consumer products, from prescription drugs to household cleaners and pesticides. And it doesn't mean that we're in a pesticide-free country all of a sudden, but it does mean that there are pesticides that farmers get to use that you and I don't get to use in our house. And it does mean that those products are regulated to make them as safe as possible for the consumers who own them. Part of an important component of health and safety regulation is banning authority. So might we want to ban some of those products? Yeah. For example, 50 caliber sniper rifles. Those are easier to purchase in this country now than handguns are. And they're literally what they sound like. They're sniper rifles. They're being used right now in the war in Afghanistan. Yet consumers can purchase them here and own them. And they're capable of going through body armor with police. The Secret Service has a lot of concern about them. And there was actually just a case brought up in Florida, Dr. Goldstein, who had amassed a huge arsenal of weapons, including 50 caliber sniper rifles. And one begs the question, what is this doing in the hands of consumers, and is this really in the best interest of what firearms are truly designed to do for consumer use? I don't think that they're designed to be used against, you know, in racial attacks against a particular group of people.
I guess I come back to the thought that I'm sure that there are people, and maybe even people listening to us, who would say something like, you know, I grew up in a house where there were guns. My father had them. My grandfather had them. We hunted. We did target shooting. When I was a boy, they taught me. When I was 12 years old, they gave me my first gun. They taught me how to handle it safely. We went out. We shot. Now I have children. They have guns. It's not a problem. I don't know anybody who's ever shot anybody else. I don't know anybody who's been shot accidentally. As far as I'm concerned, as long as people are properly educated on their use, and that having a gun in the house, having more than one, is simply not a problem. And what is the difference between that kind of gun having atmosphere, where that person could honestly tell you that story and say, you know, that's I just don't see what the deal is, and the kind of situation where guns are used in homicides. You know, what clearly there is some sort of difference between those two situations.
Well, one of the things that regulation of guns would do is to safeguard the legitimate sporting purposes of guns. And I think the message that some people are hearing, that you need a gun in your home to be safe and for self-protection, is a message that is being put out by the gun industry to try to get more people to buy guns. And what we have seen is that the gun industry is starting to lose its typical market. The grandfather buys a gun and it's good for years and years and years, and they need a new market, and they're starting to pitch guns to younger and younger consumers. And that's where you know, we're especially concerned, and with the report that we put out today is about youth and guns, because we know that easy access to a firearm is one of the greatest indicators that a gun will be used in a way that is unsafe. And so many times we know that those guns are brought into homes for self-defense, when in actuality, when you bring that gun into the home, home, I think it's 3 times more likely to be used against you than it is to be used for self-defense. Mm.
So would you say that the greatest concern, as far as you're concerned, maybe I'll go back here and we'll ask Catherine from the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence, is would you say that your biggest concern is handguns that people buy for self-defense?
I wouldn't say that's our biggest concern. I think there are a lot of other firearms that are just as dangerous as handguns. I think that because handguns are smaller, more compact, easier to use in some ways, especially for young children, because they're lighter weight as opposed to long guns, and I think they're probably a little bit more easily accessible in a home because parents and adults often store them in the bedside table, under the bed, up in the, you know, in a place that's easy for in the drawer, in their bedrooms or whatnot, places that are easy for children especially to access, and that are not as difficult to use as perhaps long guns are. I think that that's really where the majority of risks occur for gun injury and death. And I believe that I think the statistic shows that although handguns only make up 1/3 of all the guns that are owned in this country, they actually account for 2/3 of all the deaths that occur. So I think that clearly handguns are what we're seeing causing the majority of deaths and injuries in Illinois and in the U.S.
We have some other folks here who would definitely want to give them a chance to get in on the conversation. We'll go next to the next person in line, and that would be Champagne and line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'd like to speak to some of the arguments put forth by your panel. For one thing, they have claimed that there are many defective guns and guns with defective safety devices being put out on the market by gun manufacturers. I don't know the source for that claim, but it's absolutely ridiculous. The defective guns that are on the marketplace are extremely rare, and when there is a defective gun, it's immediately recalled by the manufacturer. So that's just a spurious claim. As for Chicago, which is now the murder capital of America, having taken over from Washington, D.C., Chicago and Washington, D.C. have the strictest possible firearm laws. Handguns are not permitted in Chicago, so the correlation of many available, easily available handguns and so forth to reducing crime makes absolutely no sense. The 50 caliber sniper rifle is the latest bogeyman following assault rifles and Saturday night specials that the gun control advocates wish to attack again. As far as use in crime, there's no record of a 50 caliber rifle ever being used in a crime. Assault rifles were less than 0.5% of all crimes. They were branded as a favorite of criminals, as were handguns and Saturday Night Special Report. So all of these arguments are trotted out again and again. They have been refuted. There's no basis for the claims made by your panelists. Guns are not a health issue. The danger comes from the users, negligent use of firearms, not from the firearm itself.
Well, I appreciate the call. Let's go to the panel, and you can obviously comment on anything that the caller had to say, but I'm particularly interested in perhaps that first point. What evidence do you have that there are a substantial number of guns that are defective?
Mm-hmm. The caller brought up certainly a lot of different points, but I was keyed in on the first one as well. In regard to the claim that gun manufacturers immediately recall a defective firearm, that's simply just not true. Part of the problem with the lack of health and safety regulation over the gun industry is there is no federal agency that can make sure that a company that puts out a defective firearm has to recall that product. And a perfect example of that is the Remington Model 700. It's one of the most popular bolt-action rifles sold in the United States. And that rifle has been involved in more than 100 death and injury claims and thousands of malfunction complaints. Now, that rifle's been sold for a number of decades, and the company has done nothing on it for decades. but for a CBS Evening News piece that was done about a year and a half ago that focused on one particular case, and that case also involved a suit against the company. And as a result, Remington decided to issue what they called a safety modification program. They didn't even call it a recall. They charged consumers to fix the gun. They charged them $20. It's a time-sensitive program. It's only good until the end of the year. And they didn't really make it clear to consumers that of the risk involved. This gun has been found to discharge when the bolt is moved, when the safety is released, and also just upon jarring or dropping the firearm. Now, a gun shouldn't go off unless your finger's on the trigger. But, you know, this company has been lauded for this voluntary action that they took simply because the gun industry currently sets the bar for consumer safety. And from our perspective, that bar is far too low. If this were a toy gun, they would call it a recall. It would be free. It would be indefinite. There would be a toll-free number, and consumers would be made aware of any deaths or injuries related to that product. And here you have a product that's far more lethal, and the company is not required to do anything at all. So anything that they do, they're given a great slap on the back for. And, you know, the caller who called in is exactly what the gun industry wants. They want consumers to believe that anything that happens, it's their fault. And that's unfortunate because the only recourse that consumers presently have is to sue after somebody's already been injured or killed. In terms of preventative measures, like if we were able to recognize decades ago the problem with this rifle, which actually we did recognize decades ago in suits, but if we were able to recognize it and do something about it, we may have prevented a number of deaths and injuries, not to mention a lot of headaches on the part of the consumers that own these firearms.
Let me ask one other question here, and I'll direct it to Brooke Anderson, because one of the last things the caller said was that guns, gun regulation, gun ownership, this is not a health issue. And then I suppose by extension, one would say is that it's another way that people who are concerned about guns, don't like them, would like to limit their spread. It's a stalking horse. It's what you're really concerned about is getting rid of guns, and that this is another way of making that argument.
Sure, and the health comment definitely piqued my interest because I work for Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. We're a nonprofit grassroots organization that does healthcare advocacy, and our real mission is to work for everyone to have quality, affordable healthcare, and we come to the work with a public health perspective. And of course, a lot of people do have questions about why we're involved in this particular project, and it is because we see the epidemic of gun violence in the state of Illinois and in the country as a major public health priority and an issue, and we come to it with a public health and consumer advocacy perspective that we can't just be giving people health care once they're already sick or injured, and definitely guns are causing that kind of injury and death, but that we have to go about preventing them, and we see the gun regulation approach as the best way to do that, and by protecting consumers, because there are so many people and folks who are gun owners who are very concerned about the safety of their children around guns that are defective and around safety devices that do not work.
We're already past the midpoint of the program. I have some other callers, and I hope the caller will indulge me if I want to go on and get some others. And perhaps I should again introduce our guests. This last person you heard speak, that's Brooke Anderson, gun regulation organizer with the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Also with us this morning, Sue Passion. She is firearms project manager of the Consumer Federation of America, and Catherine Griffiths from the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455 if you'd like to call in. The next person up in line is in Urbana and on line number 3.
Hello.
Yes.
There's a very high rate of depression in the United States. I have two brothers dead from suicide with a gun. And I know there's no way of measuring whether a suicide is an impulse or a reasoned out result. But I would guess that a lot of the depressives use a gun. If the gun is available, then that's the instrument that they use impulsively. And I think the bottom line is to remember always is that guns are designed to kill, guns kill. That's all I have to say.
All right. Any comments that you'd like to make on what the caller had to say?
Thank you for your comment. I think what you're saying definitely rings true with the statistics in the state of Illinois as well. I mean, we found among youth that 16% of the gun-related deaths were suicides. And what so many studies show is that it is easy access to a firearm that is the most lethal way of committing suicide that converts those attempted suicides into actual suicides. And I think gun regulation is something that could definitely impact a decrease in suicide across the state.
I'd like to add also that one thing that Sue mentioned earlier in the program, but that most Americans don't realize, is that the majority of gun deaths are in fact suicides in this country. And people often don't make the correlation between access to firearms and a depressed person or someone who's, a teenager going through a rough time growing up or whatnot. And, when those people have access to firearms in their homes, the likelihood that they're going to commit suicide really increases dramatically. So it's something that we need to educate the public about that as well, in terms of the risks that firearms pose, especially when you have, young people and even elderly people. I believe that one study showed that the suicide rate for white men over the age of 65 was just enormously higher than for the rest of the general population. And we wouldn't normally think, that our grandparents would be contemplating suicide and that having a gun around would be a danger, when in fact it really is.
And I think something else to be concerned about with easy access to firearms and the connection to suicide is murder suicides. Earlier in the spring, we did a release called American Roulette that outlined the connection between easy access to firearms and murder suicides. And what you have with firearms there is not only does someone have the capacity to take their own life, but they can also take others with them. So, for instance, in April up in Glendale Heights, we had a case where a father shot his three children, killing one of them and then took his own life. So you have people bent on taking their own life with a firearm, especially some of the guns now can take so many folks with, and of course Columbine is an example and many others.
Mm. Well, just there are many people, law enforcement, government, and I'm sure that gun advocacy groups who would say to people, if you have guns, they should be safely stored. You don't want them to get into children's hands. There are government agencies and others that will give out trigger locks, and how much if the guns that people had, if they stored them properly, if they stored the gun and the ammunition separately, if they put a trigger lock on the gun, if they locked it up to make sure that that their children can get it, if you did all those things, how far would you think that would go to reducing the problem of handgun injury?
Mm-hmm. Well, think about it. I mean, the NRA is constantly talking about how they have this Eddie Eagle gun safety program for little kids. They have they sponsor gun safety programs across the country. And actually, there was a study out of the Harvard School of Public Health that surveyed individuals who had gone through gun safety classes. These were actually adults. And they surveyed them, and then as a control, individuals who hadn't gone through gun safety classes. And they found that individuals who had gone through the gun safety classes were much more likely to keep their guns loaded and unlocked than individuals who hadn't. So oftentimes, there's a false sense of safety that's created when people go through these types of programs that, this doesn't apply to me. Now my family knows. I've talked to my kids about it. Everyone knows, and people aren't going to have a type of problem with this. Mm.
I also wanted to mention there's researchers at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill who did a study that was published in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine, and it found that there was no association between several different kinds of injury prevention practices. So, for instance, locking dangerous chemicals away or using car seats and firearm storage among gun adults. And the study actually found, and I think this is quite telling, that adults who said that they owned a gun for protection were nearly four times more likely to store their gun in an unsafe manner.
Mm. I'd also like to add one last thing. You mentioned law enforcement in your question, and there was a study done within the last few years that showed that law enforcement personnel were actually more likely to not lock up their guns and to leave them in a manner which is easily accessible for children, loaded, and really very dangerous around the home. So, We would think that people who are trained properly, especially law enforcement, would take the precautions to make sure that young people in their homes don't have access to those firearms and that they would lock them up and unload them. But in this particular study, it's showing that that's not what's happening. It's not what's happening at all.
And the last point too, I think is important, is that the information on proper storage or talking to parents about keeping their homes gun free, we don't want to completely discount that. I mean, there is a role for that, but I think that saying that in and of itself is going to solve the gun problem, and the only reason why these cases of death and injury occur are because people don't store their guns correctly, is discounting what we do for all other products that are out there on the market, in that we try to regulate the design, manufacture, and distribution of them, and we need to do the same for firearms.
Well, let's continue with talking to callers. Coles County is next in line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I find your statistic on the total number of firearms deaths and injuries by itself to be rather meaningless. What I'd like to see is a breakdown as to how many of these are attributable to police officers carrying out their lawful duties, how many are due to civilians or shopkeepers defending their life or their property or their family, and the proportion then that are suicidal. I frankly think it's a fundamental right of a person to commit suicide. It's his life. It doesn't belong to the state. I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, maybe we could save that for that particular issue for another day. But are the statistics broken down in the kind of way that the caller talks about, so that one could answer a question like that?
We actually didn't include legal intervention, which is where a police officer shoots a criminal during the commission of a felony, in terms of the homicides that we took a look at. So we did not include those specifically because of the issue that the caller brought up. We wanted to just focus on, just people having guns in their home, civilians, essentially, so not crime-related. And, Brooke did have some statistics from another study that she included in her study, looking at how many of them were crime-related. And, in fact, unfortunately, crime is not it's a very, very small proportion of death and injury in the United States related to guns. I think typically when Americans think of gun-related deaths and injuries, they think of school shootings or workplace shootings, high-profile shootings, thefts, all of that. And it's simply not the case that makes up the majority. Now, suicides, as Catherine mentioned before, are about half of all gun-related deaths and injuries in the United States. And I understand your point about an individual right for people related to suicide, but the caller that was a couple of calls before made the really important point that it's simply oftentimes people just having a gun around the house. And public health studies show that usually people who are suicidal are suicidal for just a very short period of time. And it's unfortunate that it's whatever they happen to have around the house that they're going to use. And guns are far more lethal than a lot of other means of suicide, and much more likely to result in a completed suicide than other types of means.
Well, let's go on to another caller. This is next person is in Decatur, line two. Hello.
Yes. I've been kind of bothered with some use of words, talk about gun violence, but most of what you're talking about, in fact, just in the last exchange, one of the panel were saying that homicides, or crime-related deaths with guns are a small proportion of the deaths, and about half are suicide, which maybe is a separate category. But it seems like we've really got maybe three issues. One is the suicide. One is the use of guns for violent purposes, and the third is the misuse of guns, or accidental careless. Harm caused by careless use. But there's also one other thing I'd like to look at, and that is to address the issue of why people feel the need to have handguns in their homes for self-defense. Now, if you feel you need that, And in many places in this country, people, either because they're far from law enforcement or they don't trust the law enforcement or it's a crime-ridden neighborhood, I think many people can make a case for feeling a need for providing their own crime deterrent, you might call it. And if you're going to do that, you don't want a gun that's unloaded and locked up. You want one that's readily available, and maybe you have to take a few chances. I guess really that's all I have to say. I'd be interested to hear the comments on it.
Okay. Well, whatever part of the caller's comments you'd like to talk about.
I think, I think it's the industry is pushing the line on self-defense, and it, particularly as a woman, frightens me the way in which they're targeting women, the gun industry is targeting women, to need a gun in the home. And, I've been to a shooting range and practiced shooting guns, and one of the things that struck me most when I had that experience was how incredibly difficult it is if you're not well-trained. And I imagine even if you are well-trained, in that flight-or-flight situation, when you know that there's an intruder in your home, to get that gun out and use it properly, the kind of fine motor skill that it takes and attention and strength and all that. I think the ability of guns for self-defense is highly overrated. And the studies have really shown that not only a family history of having a handgun in the home for self-defense makes those families more at risk for having that gun used either in an accidental shooting, a suicide, or a homicide, something other than self-defense, but also that it's really an ineffective tool for self-defense, and the number of times more likely that someone is to have that gun used against them in a homicide than to be able to use it for self-defense, I believe, is 5 times greater in the home.
I'd like to add, there is a data that shows that for homes with guns, the risk of homicide is 3 times greater. The risk of suicide is 5 times greater. And, I think there are certainly people out there who do feel that guns are the only way to protect themselves. What we're trying to do is, even for those people, educate them to the risks that they're taking on by purchasing a gun and having it in their home, especially if they're going to keep it loaded and at the ready. For adults who think that having the gun under their pillow at night is the safest place to put it, they're really putting their families in danger. And, we want to make sure that people understand what they're doing and know that they're putting themselves and their children especially at a much higher risk of injury or killing themselves with a gun that was brought into the house to do the opposite, to protect them, to save their lives as opposed to taking them.
We only have about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to try to get maybe one or two more people. So if it's okay, let's go on to the next caller in line, and that would be in Champaign and on line 3. Hello.
Hi. I find it funny how the people on this board are so biased towards guns. Like the one lady, how she said that she wouldn't, that a gun is so complicated to use. I've been around guns since I've been a little kid, and, they're not that hard. If someone's in your house and they're going to be intruding, if you have it in a safe place or a place where you can easily reach it, it's not that hard and you can defend yourself. I also find it funny how the board throws around these beliefs or the supposed research has been done. But I have been to their website, and I found it funny how they don't leave any links to these references, or that they don't realize that a lot of these references themselves are just as biased as the supposed NRA. And I'd like maybe to ask the board, could they please answer one of my questions that I have, and that is, could they please explain why the deaths and crime rates have risen in countries such as England and Canada and Australia since gun restrictions have increased so much? I was wondering if they could answer that for me.
Well, caller, I can actually relate to your experience. I grew up in western Pennsylvania. I grew up around guns. I had the first day of hunting season off every year. There are guns, lots of guns in my family, and I am a shooter myself. And I agree with Brooke's comment. It's not easy. I mean, even law enforcement will tell you that when you are in the situation where you have an intruder coming at you, to actually use that gun in self-defense. And I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, but I have talked to many, many people who have. And it is not an easy situation. Not to mention that it's not always legal to, quote-unquote, defend yourself. And oftentimes what happens is people find themselves in litigation after these supposed cases of self-defense. So it's important for people to understand what their state laws are around self-defense, as well as considering the risks involved in using in having guns in the home for self-defense. In terms of the statistics that we've used, they've come from medical journals, New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of the American Medical Association. As I mentioned before, we also use statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's unfortunate if you think that those sources are biased, but they're actually from some very reputable public health organizations. You had mentioned the comments that you had, the concerns that you had about other countries. And, you know, the United States still ranks number one compared to other industrialized countries when it comes to rates of gun injury and death. And unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, we have had quite an impact on a lot of other countries, including countries like you mentioned, like England, for fascination with firearms and for use of firearms in crime. And people have actually brought more guns into that country. Now, we actually import into the United States here guns that other countries can't even have. That, for example, we import guns from Canada that Canada manufactures that Canadians can't even own. So despite the fact that there have been increases in use of guns and crime in England and in some other countries, we still outshine them tenfold when it comes to rates of death and injury. So I understand the point that you're making. More of that has to do with the fact that we have had an influence on them for criminals to actually have these firearms and have brought them into the country despite the efforts that they've gone to try to restrict them as much as possible.
Hmm. We'll try real quick to get at least a quick comment from one more caller in Robinson on our toll-free line, line four. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. Do you think that if we would require all gun owners to carry firearm insurance, that even if gun owners don't purchase the insurance, we would at least get the powerful insurance lobby on our side and revoke the Dingell Act that would keep guns out of the Consumer Protection Act?
Wow, the insurance idea I have not heard about in quite a long time, actually. I think, you know, again, we want to shift the focus from the user of the product to the product itself and the industry that makes the product. Now, what you were referring to is in 1972, when the Consumer Product Safety Act was passed, guns were specifically exempt from that legislation. We support legislation that's currently in Congress that would give the Department of Treasury Health and Safety Consumer Protection Authority over guns and ammunition, and we feel like that's the most comprehensive way to go. When you focus on the user, again, you know, you're not getting at the real root of the issue, and so we think that this is the most comprehensive way to go, and groups like American Academy of Pediatrics, the ABA, and NAACP all agree with us, and we invite all Illinois consumers out there to visit our website at www.regulateguns.org to find out more.
We're going to have to stop, I'm sorry to say. I know the debate will continue. Perhaps on another day we can get back to it with some other guests, but for the moment we're going to have to stop because we've used the time. I want to say thanks again to our guests. The last person you heard, that's Sue Passion, Firearms Project Manager with the Consumer Federation of America. Also with us, Brooke Anderson, Gun Regulation Organizer with the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and Catherine Griffiths from the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.